Welcome to How Life Changed, a podcast that features stories of real people and how their lives have changed as a result of COVID-19. I'm your host, John Noltner, and I'm glad you could join us. Change is a constant in life, but as a global community, we're now in the midst of unprecedented change as a result of the pandemic, and it's altering our work, home, and community lives in unexpected and profound ways. Each of us will experience this outbreak in our own unique fashion. Each of us, a single thread woven into the fabric of this historic event. Over the next 30 minutes or so, we'll explore just one of those threads, one person's story, and through that lens, hope to gain some human insight into the bigger picture of what's happening in our world today. We're recording this episode of How Life Changed on Wednesday, April 8th, 2020. Today, I'm talking with Ethan Bender, a bass player, husband, and father in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. So, Ethan, thanks for joining us for the show.
Hello, glad to be here.
Hey, I have to start by asking, so Wisconsin, like so many other states, has a statewide order to stay home, but you all had a presidential primary election yesterday. What the heck is going on?
There's so many different places to go with that. I think it was politicized, and if you look at the political goings on over the last 8 years in Wisconsin, I think this is something that unfortunately is not a surprise. In terms of how everything unfolded, I think Wisconsin might be the only state that didn't postpone its election. Something to do with there being a state Supreme Court election, I think, that had something to do with that. And the ruling party in the legislature wanted these elections to go on as scheduled. That's the only way I look at it. And it's something that angers me. I think anger is the main emotion at this point. And then, I don't know, I'll see what happens in the coming days. My wife and I will kind of see where we're going to go with that. I think it definitely means that we're going to be much more politically involved from this point forward. Like I said, I'm still kind of angry right now, and I'm choosing my words carefully. We're in the middle of a pandemic, the likes of which anyone alive at this point in the U.S. has seen. But as you said, we're in a statewide order to stay indoors, to shelter in place, so on and so forth. Yet you're going to green light elections. Doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. That you have to choose between voting and your life and the life of loved ones and, possibly people you'll never meet. So
had you voted early, or did you wind up going out yesterday?
I winded up going out yesterday. I'll have to say that I voted out of a sense of duty. I felt like it was a hell of a poll tax. You know what I mean? Your life or your vote. But I felt like that had to happen. That was something that definitely had to happen. And trust me, I went back and forth on it a lot in thinking about it. My particular issue was that when I tried to get a ballot online, go online for an absentee ballot, for whatever reason, I was not registered at my address, which for me is that's a real head scratcher, because I can think of one election that I've missed in the past 10 years. And I've been at the address that I'm at now since 1998. So I didn't really understand why. The thing that frustrated me was the last minute things that went on in terms of Governor Evers trying to postpone the election and then having the Supreme Court reverse that. That was something that was frustrating for me. It was angering for me. And at that point, I mean, as I said earlier, I went back and forth with it. You know, do I want to go and vote and put myself at risk and put my kids at risk? And like I said, possibly someone I don't even know, putting them at risk. And finally ended up at, you know, what was obvious was going out and voting in person.
And what was it like out there? Were there long lines where you were?
There were long lines, and at times the poll workers, there were some mistakes that were made, but, you know, given the situation, don't blame them at all. You know, there are going to be some mistakes made, and under those circumstances, you know, in that situation, the lines were long. We got there, the polls opened at 7. We got there at about 6:30, and when we got there, there was already a line. People were actually doing the, you know, the distancing, social distancing thing. They were doing that on their own. We actually lined up at the wrong entrance, and one of the workers told us to come out and move, so that put us even further behind at that point. All told, it took us about an hour and a half to vote. Once the line started moving, things went pretty smoothly. At that point, I didn't hear of a lot of people who were at the wrong place, or it didn't. There was one person, I think, that I saw with my own eyes that had to actually go to a different polling place. And that was another frustrating thing, actually, in, just talking about polling places. Milwaukee, I guess, from the numbers that I saw yesterday, is normally under this kind of a situation, Milwaukee would have 180 polling places open. However, yesterday there were only 5 polling places open for the entire city of Milwaukee. So having heard that, you know, knowing that information, I went into that, you know, when we got there, you know, when we were on our way, whatever, was aware of that situation. So I had already in my mind cut some slack to the people that were actually working there and whatnot. But it made me kind of strengthen my resolve in terms of, like I said, future political involvement. I felt like that situation could have been handled better, that we shouldn't have been in the position to have only 5 polling places open, you know.
Yeah, when I think of who runs the polls in my community, it's a lot of retired folks. It's a lot of older people who are pretty vulnerable. And what I read online was that, you know, some of those ordinary volunteers chose not to volunteer this year because of the personal risk. Who were the election judges? Who showed up and who was running the polls where you were?
There were a lot of faces I didn't recognize. Like I said, I voted pretty regularly over the last, I think I said 10 years. It's closer to 20 years, actually, now that I sit back and think about it. I'm getting old. Time is flying by, I guess. But anyway, because I was going to the same place, you know, to vote, the names and the faces started, you know, I started to recognize people. You know, you start to know people. Actually get, you know, look forward to seeing certain faces. I did not see those faces this time. Truthfully, the people that normally work the polls, you know, or the particular place that I go to, they are the same generation as my parents. And my parents both passed away recently. They were in their early 80s. So that was the age group that a lot of the poll workers were, you know, at the normal place. This time though, yesterday, I'd say the average age was, you know, mid to late 30s. There are a lot of faces. As a matter of fact, I didn't recognize one face yesterday.
Ethan, what was the mood when you were there? What did the folks waiting in line? What did that feel like?
It's interesting you should ask that. I really wanted to kind of ask around, but at the same time, I didn't. The political polarization that we're all so familiar with right now is well and alive here in Wisconsin, probably more so even than other states. And you really don't know what you're going to get when you start that conversation, you know? So I myself never really delved into it. I tried to keep it light. With Donna and I were in line together, tried to keep it light between the two of us, as well as, you know, the people that were nearby. Every now and then you would hear someone talk about the situation and, you know, give their opinion and that kind of thing. And for the most part, everyone was okay. There was a low level kind of a simmer, you know what I mean? Where there was some, what's the word I'm looking for? I wouldn't call it anger, but I think everybody, despite what they were feeling, went out of their way to make things go a little smoother. But there was a little bit of everything going on there. There was some resentment there. There was anger there. You could hear it from some people. There was a guy, he was in back of us in line, probably in his early 70s. And he certainly didn't have to be there, and he was there. And he didn't mention anything about his personal health or anything like that. But, you know, older black male, you know, I don't know if you've been reading this or not, but I've read a lot of articles that have said that black communities have been getting hit harder by this virus than other communities. So he definitely didn't have to be there. And every now and then I would, you know, kind of commiserate with him, actually, in terms of some of the things that he was seeing and having to deal with. But, yeah, you know, he was there.
I've heard those statistics as well. Some communities that maybe the population is 30% black, but that community is representing 70% of the coronavirus deaths in the same town. And some pretty horrifying numbers. In fact, I'm trying to figure out who I can talk to, who I can interview to explore that idea. If you or anybody else has any thoughts about that, I'd be happy to be connected.
For me, it's obvious, especially if you look at a city like Milwaukee, or I've been hearing some scary things about Detroit right now. I'm sure the same thing is happening in New York, definitely New Orleans. I guess to bring it to a very personal level, where I'm sitting right now as we're talking, I can look out the front window of my house. I can look about a half block away and see the house of a black man. He was a retiree, bought the house that he's living in now when he retired, he and his wife. And real nice guy. I'm laughing because I'm just thinking, you know, every time I saw him, you know, kind of a slow mover, slow talker, very smart guy, very astute, and would always enjoy talking with him, you know, conversations and that kind of thing. He was one of the first people to die from the virus here in Milwaukee. So that was sobering, to say the least, still is, you know. So that's where it's hit me. And I guess the when I started to hear these statistics, it didn't really surprise me. You know, the statistics in terms of the coronavirus hitting the black community harder than other communities. If you know, look at a situation that's already dire in a lot of places, a lot of situations in terms of health and the health needs of that community, you know, not being met. If you have that in, you know, quote unquote normal times, then, you know, under these conditions, you can see where it would be a lot worse. And that's certainly what's happening right now. The numbers are bearing themselves out right now.
I'm sorry for your loss for your neighbor down the road. I will do what I can to find the right voice to explore that idea more, because I think it's a horrifying and important aspect to be talking about right now.
If I think of any names, I'll definitely send them your way.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks, Ethan. And I think we'll wrap up this talk about the election and then move on to a couple other things. But I think that you summed it up well. To when you said, you know, that's one hell of a poll tax.
Yeah, that's definitely something that particular history, you use that phrase poll tax and you think of some pretty dark times in American history. And that's definitely on my mind right now. And it's, yeah, different people deal with it in different ways, I guess. When you're in the middle of something like this, though, it's just, what's the the saying I would hear. I don't know where it comes from. The saying, "May you live in interesting times."
Oh yeah, yeah. We certainly are doing that, aren't we?
right.
So hey, Ethan, let's shift over to a couple of other things. So you're a musician, and I should say that we studied in college together in the music program at UW-Eau Claire. You are one of the finest bass players that I have ever come across in my life, and I want you to talk about your what your music scene looked like, you know, a month ago before everything shifted here.
Well, if I was one of the finest bass players, we definitely have to talk about our shared experiences in theory as well as music history. And how you got me through a lot of tests there. I remember a lot of late night study sessions and whatnot. Study sessions for you, complete studies in fear for me. But
I'm glad it looked good on the outside, because I'm pretty sure I was experiencing that same fear on the inside.
I don't know. Yeah, it definitely wasn't showing. Definitely was not showing on the outside.
Here, let me just add one thing, Ethan. The difference is you're still playing your instrument. I gave up on mine. So somebody won in that race.
Well, I don't know about that.
Tell me what you're doing with your music these days. Well, these days meaning a month ago, because I'm sure it's all changed.
Well, yeah, it definitely has changed. My wife, Donna, I got to do the name drop thing, the promo thing, but it's a reality thing for us and our lifestyle. My wife, Donna Woodall, is a singer here in Milwaukee and has been since the... I don't want to date her, but I mean, it's all out there anyway. But she's been doing it since the early 90s, been singing. And she and I actually met doing that. And she's had her own band since the late 90s, actually. And we were doing pretty good there. And then, you know, decided to have kids, I guess. You know, I guess it was worth a while to do that. But I'm kidding, of course. But that kind of derailed what we were doing as a group. And we haven't really gotten back to that until the last, I would say, 3 to 4 years. And that's actually started to pick up and getting, you know, starting to get back to where it was in terms of the number of times that we were playing out, you know, the number of gigs that we play and that kind of thing. And we were kind of building up ahead of steam. We're looking forward to, you know, playing out over the summer and that kind of thing. And then this thing comes out of nowhere, and suddenly we're in the midst of a shelter in the midst of a pandemic. And for us, and also for other musicians, you know, pretty much all of the musicians in Milwaukee, it shut everything down. And, you know, from what I can see on social media and from friends that I have, you know, in different places, it's happened to everyone. And I mean, everyone. I've got friends that work at some pretty high levels, doing some pretty cool stuff, you know, TV wise, and that, you know, big name TV shows and that kind of thing. And they are no longer, these were people that were in the recording studio. They were doing vocal arrangements, or guys that were teaching, guys that were gigging, that whole thing. Everything is shut down. So what I've seen, and Donna and I are kind of working on this, what I've seen are a lot of people taking advantage of technology and you know, playing as a group yet apart. And seeing a lot of that in social media and that kind of thing. And Donna and I are working on that. Donna, of course, during the day is a teacher. And so she's working on that. And some of the same kinds of technology, you know, she's working on still teaching kids and that kind of thing. So we're working on doing that, working on songwriting, playing as a duo, bass vocal duo, which has been a lot of fun. Been working on that over the last 2 years now, I want to say. So doing all that, plus we've got, you know, two daughters, two teenage daughters, and two dogs. And so working on music kind of helps to relieve tension, you know, relieve obvious tension that comes about as a result of everyone being on top of each other. And the house that we're in is kind of small to begin with. So being under the shelter in orders kind of exacerbates that whole situation. We're dealing with a lot right now, but musically it kind of lets us let off a little bit of that, you know, steam, a little bit of that tension, you know, that we're all dealing with right now.
Hey, let me ask you just a couple more questions. What, with everybody sheltered in place in the home there, what's the hardest thing about everybody being packed into that space together right now?
I'm sure it's the same thing that we're all experiencing from pretty much coast to coast at this point. And that is you start to treasure that alone time. And that's what we're missing right now. It's great that we are all together, especially at this point in their lives, because they start to have that part of their life that you don't see, you know, as they get older and they start to mature. And there is that natural, you know, you start to move apart. And we as parents, we don't want to see that. We don't want it. But at the same time, you need it, because you do want them to go out into the world and kind of carve their own place, you know, find their own place. But it's just, it's hard to see that. I think that's the biggest thing for us. At the same time, you know, you need that individual space, and that's what we're kind of missing. So the dogs are either really happy right now at getting a billion walks a day, or they're really hating this time. You know what I mean? But that's one of the times for me, if I need to kind of clear my head, you know, take one of the dogs, take both of the dogs, whatever, go out and take him for a walk, you know? But that's the, at least for us, that's the hardest thing. But you do start to realize the things that you take, for granted, you know, the actual relationship, you know what I mean? Parent, sibling, you know, son, daughter, that whole thing. So I guess it's great to, and this is one thing I need to speak on, and it hits me every now and then. Being able to shelter in is most definitely a privilege. And as bleak as things are now in all kinds of areas, you know, we spoke briefly to, you know, what's going on racially, and how the pandemic affects that. So there's that. And then there's what everyone is dealing with, you know, the fact that you do have to shelter in and you're forcibly removed from any kind of social interaction, you know, physical, you know, social interaction. So those things are bad, but at the same time, to be able to do that, that's a pretty amazing thing, you know? So I'm thankful that individually we're able to shelter in. You know, Donna is still drawing a paycheck, which, you know, a lot of people can't do right now. I actually picked up a job as a paraprofessional in MPS, Milwaukee Public School System. And fortunately, I am still, you know, getting a check from that, you know, at least until that contract is up. So it's a privilege. It really is. I know people that don't have that privilege. And I feel for those people, because the decision that I made yesterday, well, that we made, that Donna and I made yesterday to go out and expose ourselves, you know, in order to vote, a lot of people have to make that decision every day, you know. We were grocery shopping, tried to get Donna to stay home, but she wanted to get out. We had to go out and do some necessary shopping. And as we were out, we noticed that there were people that were getting on and off the city buses, and there was no such thing as social distancing happening at all. There were a lot of people on the buses, you know, and I'm looking at that and I'm thinking to myself, if I was in a different situation, you know, I would have to do the same thing. There wouldn't really be a choice. I would have to, you know, get out every day, you know, and that's it's a different perspective, you know, one I think that people should really think about right now.
When we get through this thing and you look back, what is it that you think you're going to cherish about this time in history, this time in your life?
It's being able to, treasure those relationships, treasure the time that you do have together. You hear Molly, our new addition, barking in the background there. Her very distinctive horse bark. Yeah, she has a bark like she's a chain smoker. So that's cool. You know, having a new dog in the house, dogs are very special to us. Like I said, that's going to be it. Just that, you know, the dogs, us being together, eating together, having the time to talk. The first thing I was going to say when you asked that question was the fact that my oldest just turned 17 and she's probably not going to be here after another year and a half or so. She is more than likely going to be out of the house, will probably be several states away. And it's very cool to have this time kind of come out of nowhere, you know. There's almost an opportunity here for a reset, you know what I mean, in terms of your relationship and just the day-to-day and that kind of thing. So just those are the things that I'm definitely going to look back on, just all the things that are happening in terms of family.
I hope you all get to enjoy that time. Thanks for taking the time to talk today. It's good to hear your voice, Ethan.
Likewise. Thank you so much for asking.
Thanks for going out and voting yesterday in the midst of all of this. You guys take good care and look forward to talking to you again.
Thanks, John.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us for How Life Changed. I'm your host, John Knowlner, and I look forward to seeing you next time. How Life Changed is a series produced by A Piece of My Mind, a multimedia arts project that uses storytelling to rediscover what connects us. You can find A Piece of My Mind on Instagram at APOMM Stories, on Twitter at A Piece of My Mind 1, that's the numeral 1, Facebook and YouTube at A Piece of My Mind. Piece is always spelled out, P-E-A-C-E. And you can find all of those links on our website, apomm.net. That's the acronym for A Piece of My Mind.net. Listen to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and tell a friend to listen too. Together, we'll see the world in new ways, one story at a time.